Well, through the service, we're going to track Luke's account of the resurrection and then the disciples on the road to Emmaus. Peter's going to come and read us the first part of that from Luke chapter 24.
And that reading is found on page 1061 of the Church Bibles. Luke 24 at verse 1. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee, 'The Son of Man must be delivered over to the hands of sinners, be crucified, and on the third day be raised again.'" Then they remembered his words. When they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the others with them, who told this to the apostles. But they did not believe the women, because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away, wondering to himself what had happened.
Well, the scene shifts for the next part of the reading to the road to the town Emmaus. Daniel's going to read for us. Thank you.
Continuing in chapter 24. Now on that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. And they talked and discussed these things with each other. Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, but they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of the women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb, and they found it just as the woman had said, but they did not see Jesus."
Continuing at verse 25. Jesus said to them, "How foolish you are and how slow to believe all the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he were going further. But they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread.
It's a remarkable story, isn't it? There's a kind of richness to that narrative. These two men who'd followed Jesus, who was sad, disappointed, disillusioned on their journey, probably not making things easier for the either of them as they compounded their sense of gloom. And suddenly Jesus is with them, though they don't see him. They're prevented from an instant recognition. There's a work that has to be done in their hearts before their eyes are opened. He makes to go on, but they invite him in. And then they join in the meal, and then he takes charge, as Jesus does when we invite him in. He takes charge, and he takes the bread. It probably wasn't a loaf like this, made with some yeast, but probably one of those flatbreads made without yeast. And still, if you go to different parts of the world, at the beginning of a meal, a host will sometimes take a bit of flatbread like that and break it and give thanks, or just break it without the giving of thanks. I've experienced that in Central Asia, and it seems a widespread custom. But it was in that moment, the breaking of the bread, the distributing of it, that their eyes were opened. And they recognize Jesus. When they go to see their friends and they announce, full of joy now, everything changed. They announce that they've seen Jesus. They explain all that's happened. And they explain in the second half of verse 35 how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. And just in a few minutes, as we prepare to receive the bread and the wine of the Lord's Supper, I want to ask you whether you will recognize Jesus this evening when we break the bread. It's a simple physical act that he performed, and I will do so the same in a few minutes' time. But a simple physical act that represents so much, will you recognize Jesus when the bread is broken this evening? There was a sermon preached more than 100 years ago on this passage and this text. And the title was, "Jesus, Near But Unrecognized." Jesus, Near But Unrecognized. And I just hope there will be no one this evening who remains in that state as we go through the rest of our service, that Jesus is near, because he is near to us, invisible though he may be, that he remains unrecognized when the bread is broken. What will we recognize about him? Well, the first thing is that we will recognize his body. Because the bread stands for the body of Christ. Already at the first Easter, at the Last Supper, he had instituted the Lord's Supper, which we still celebrate. And he had said to them, "This is my body." A symbol of his own body, which was shortly to be crucified. The bread stands for the body. And as we see the bread broken, this is just the most wonderful reminder of the incarnation, of God's great act of taking on flesh, his great act of visitation. We've some family who've come all the way across the Atlantic for Easter and for a family occasion. That's wonderful. God's great act of family visitation was to come to earth for us and be born as a human being. Sometimes people think, oh, God's not interested in the earth. Not interested in the earth anymore because of the way we've messed it up. God's just concerned with spiritual things. No, he has made this world and he loves this world in all its physicality enough for his own son to take on human identity, joined with us in our physicality. So he had hair and skin and blood. He had a nose. He had ears and hands, a stomach, legs. Got blisters on his feet and no doubt banged his thumb occasionally in his carpenter's workshop. He joins us in the limitedness of being a human being with its pain and its tiredness and its weakness, though he had no moral weakness. We recognize his body, him coming for us in a body like yours and like mine. The next thing is that we recognize his brokenness, because the bread was broken, and this loaf will be broken too. You see, they didn't just recognize him when the bread was on the table and he was giving thanks for it. They recognized him in the brokenness of the bread, and so do we. In the breaking of the bread, we see symbolized the brokenness of the Son of God for us on our behalf. The brokenness of his body on the cross, this terrible, terrible, racking way to die. The brokenness of his mind, troubled as it was. The brokenness of his spirit as God withdrew from him and poured out his wrath upon him. Now, I dare say if we added up between us all the bodily aches and pains and the physical pain that we as a group have been through in our lives, including childbirth and kidney stones and all the other things that we've all had, that would come to quite a weight of physical pain. And perhaps if we could add together all the sadness and the depression and the gloom and the other things that have affected us as a group of people again, and if you could make that into a weight, it would be pretty heavy. And if we could add together all our sense of having been cut off from God and the weight and the guilt and the burden of our sin, again, that would be another weight. And if you could put them all together, that would be a really heavy thing, representing our brokenness. But it would be nothing compared to what Jesus suffered and what broke him. As we see the bread broken, we recognize Jesus' brokenness. And we realize what that tells us about ourselves, for it recognizes, it reminds us of how much we need him, the hunger that we have in our lives for something. Just occasionally, I'll have been out and been doing something, and my mind been on something else, and I'll come in or be in the house, and Debbie will say, "Aren't you a bit hungry?" And I'll suddenly wake up and think, "Yes, yes, I am hungry," and immediately I'm aware of it. And we cannot always recognize just how hungry we are spiritually for precisely what Jesus can give us. We have multiple needs, emotional needs, physical needs, and above all, a spiritual need for God himself at the center of our lives. Because life doesn't work right if God isn't at the center and in command. And all our brokenness can be traced back to our refusal to put him at the center. And we have this need for the love of God above everything else, to be relationally what drives us and moves us as we love him and receive his love and serve him. We have a great hunger for this, and to be released from the sin that keeps us away from him and the great penalty of sin, which is death and eternal death. As we see the bread broken, suddenly, yes, I am hungry. I'm hungry for you, O Lord. And then we recognize our meal. It's a terrible thing to realize you are hungry and then realize you've nothing edible in the house, or nothing that you feel like eating, or nothing that's very nourishing or nurturing. But in what Jesus has done for us and in Jesus himself, we have the perfect meal, the perfect food. All of those needs met perfectly in every way. At each stage of our lives, whatever we need is there for us in Christ. Above all, more of Christ himself. We should probably recognize, too, that this is not an individual thing. It's not just about me and my personal needs and the Lord and how he can meet them, because we have social needs, too. As we see the bread broken and we see others sharing it around us, we realize that God has provided for us a family. This is a collective thing. There were the two of them together, who could together have been driving themselves into a spiral of depression, but together were able to raise themselves up after Jesus was revealed to them and then go and share with others. I was sad, deeply sad recently. Someone emailed me to say that they had a change in their family situation in their house, and that they've got a large house and extra bedrooms, and they were having an 18-year-old intern in their church come to stay with them. And I thought how lovely it was. And they said, well, she's from a background that's had some difficulties, and one of the things that's changed for her in coming to live with us is that she'd never previously eaten a meal with her whole family. The great thing about the gospel of Jesus Christ is that he doesn't just save us as individuals. He provides a meal for all of his people together. And a family existence and relationship, which is different from just being isolated and on our own. So the question that comes for us is, are we recognizing Jesus? As we think about the bread, as we think about it being broken and distributed and received, are we recognizing Jesus or just seeing pieces of bread and a largely empty ritual, something that's become we've become too accustomed to? Do you remember that sermon title from 100 years ago? Jesus, near, but unrecognized. May that not be true for any of us this evening. He is near to us, and he wants us to discern him and to recognize him and to receive the bread and, of course, the wine as well, with the full weight of these marvelous symbols which are given to ravish our hearts, to feed our souls as we receive them by faith. For some of us, the reason we can't recognize him is that we're concentrating too much on our own brokenness. And it may be even that there are some of us who are like the people on the road to Emmaus. And we spend too much time just sharing our own wounds and sorrows with some other person and just making life seem worse even than it is by doing that. And not saying to the other, actually, let's look at Jesus and his brokenness and discern him. For some of us, there may be a sense of distance that he's not near. Actually, you need to know he is near. He's always near. He lived, he died, he rose, he is alive, he's ascended on high, but by his Spirit, he's always near his people. It's not simply in a time of communion, a communion service, where we can draw near to him. We can do so anywhere. I was away with a group of other leaders this week, and we had a little talk, a little debate, as it were, informally about the communion service, and we were talking about this and that, how we do it, what it means, and so on. And there was one in particular who was insistent on asking, what's so special about communion? And the rest was trying to make a case for communion being a special way of drawing near to Christ. And it's special in the sense that nothing else is given to us that has these physical symbols, and there's something about the physicality of it, the eating of the bread, the absorbing of it, the drinking of the wine that just makes it all the more real. But actually, it's a special version of what's available to us all the time by faith, because Jesus is always near if we will discern him. This asks us, are we being unnecessarily negative and pessimistic and defeated and gloomy and guilt-ridden and critical of ourselves and others and not just thinking of him, the broken one for us, in whom is life and hope and joy? Or for others, we're just full of ourselves and push away a sense that we might have a need of Jesus. We're self-sufficient people. We rather look down on the people who aren't self-sufficient, and we try and help them along a little bit, but privately we're glad we're not like that. And yet the tearing of the bread reminds us of our true spiritual state, if only we could see it clearly, that we are all spiritually and morally broken people, and we need the wholeness of feeding on Jesus. because that is what we do. Not only in the receiving of the bread and the wine, it is what we can do at any time and in any place and should be nurturing our souls moment by moment, week by week, drawing near to Christ, recognizing him by faith and receiving himself and all his gifts. Is he near but unrecognized? Or will you allow Jesus himself to reveal himself to you as we break bread and as we share wine together?